Daily DVR Does Veronica Mars is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com and use code SUMMERSALE to get 30% off the sale price of all clearance items. It's summertime, and things are on sale at Cufflinks.com/DVR. So go there today. You can also use the code DVR20 to get 20% off your order at any time. We're talking about cufflinks, ties, belts, handkerchiefs, bags, socks. So many awesome products, and we're going to be giving a bunch away this summer. So go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Welcome to Daily DVR Does Veronica Mars. My name is Axel. My co-host in this journey will be Ken. And you can find out more about us at DVRpodcast.com. And also consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/DVR. You can also send your feedback to DVRpodcast@gmail.com. Today, we will be talking about Season 1 of Veronica Mars, which consisted of 22 episodes and premiered on September 22nd, 2004, on the now-defunct UPN. We'll be covering all three seasons and the movie over the next 4 weeks. Then we're going to cover Season 4 on Hulu when it drops July 26th. The whole 8-episode season will premiere that day, but we're going to ask you to take a journey with us. Take our hands, Ken on one side, me on the other. It's like Hands Across America. We're going to cover 2 episodes a week for 4 weeks. So all in all, we've got 8 weeks of Ken. At least I have 8 weeks of Ken, and you can share him with me. Of Veronica Mars goodness as well. And I am super excited. Ken, how you doing, buddy? I'll let you talk now.
This is the best end of Game of Thrones hangover cure ever. When I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about next in the podcasting world and for your brilliant channel, it dawned on me that this show that I loved 15 years ago, was rebooting on Hulu, and it was going to come out with a new 4th season. And I thought back to how much I loved the show back in 2004. And I thought, you know, there's no one else that I want to talk to about Veronica Mars than Axel Foley. There's no one else that I want to talk to about the new episodes, which are going to drop in a few scant weeks. I'm psyched. I'm psyched to talk about another show that I love. This is a great show. You know, the one thing that I would say connects it to other TV shows that you and I have talked about is its intelligence, its denseness, and its great characters, all of which was true of Game of Thrones, equally true here. It's a great show to sort of roll up your sleeves and talk about.
It is, and it's the emotionality too. The characters on this show are live and real, and they feel, and they're vulnerable, and it deals with things like mental illness and peer pressure, of course, from the high school vibe growing up, generational divides and differences, but also coming together. Veronica Mars is a great show. I was introduced to Veronica Mars when I was working at World of Video by Sean, who I may have mentioned before in this pod. One day I'll get Sean to podcast with me. But we had it on DVD there, and that was, I think while I was working there, the first season played, and then it was about 2005, I think the second season was going to premiere, and we had the DVDs, or maybe it was even 2006 when I noticed it, but I think I watched the last season. A couple of the last episodes I actually watched while they were airing, but I did not watch the first couple seasons Sean turned me on to. And he's like, he loved Veronica Mars. He's like, you've got to watch this. And I immediately watched the first season on DVD and I fell in love with it. What was your experience? Did you watch it while it aired?
I watched all of season 2 in real time and I was thoroughly confused and amazed and overwhelmed and captivated. I feel like if that's what you, if you did what I did, you could still enjoy season two, because they do a really, because of the voiceover work that Kristen Bell does, she fills in a lot of gaps.
Yes.
Yeah. And her voiceover work is amazing. But so I still enjoyed it. But once season two was over, I went out and bought season one on DVD and I inhaled it. And then I went back and watched season two again when it got released on DVD a few months later. And then I enjoyed season two even more because I had watched season one. But I watched season two in real time. And, you know, it was a great experience. I feel like one of the ways that one of the many ways that Veronica Mars was ahead of its time was this is would have been the perfect show always to binge.
Yes.
Having to wait week to week, especially with considering how dense, how more dense season two gets. You know, sometimes I had to take notes. Like I literally was taking notes because I wanted to remember certain things and not forget them. Because I mean, you know this, Axel, like, you know, some character will say something in episode two and then in episode six, they'll make a reference to it. Yes. And it's like a major revelation and a clue.
It's such great world building through. Yes. That's what's great about, like, when we talk, when we talk so much about Game of Thrones or, and these things are popular, whether it's the Marvel movies or whatever, this world building idea. And when something like a Veronica Mars, or I could compare it to like a, say, Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad, a world that doesn't have these fantastical elements, it is our world, but they create their own world through a use of language and referential stuff, like whether it's locations, events, people, and slang that they create, right? And that is the way that this Veronica Mars started to build off of season one. And as we talk about the other seasons, that part of it gets deeper and deeper. And that's one of the things that makes it the type of thing that 15 years later, you know, they already did the Kickstarter movie, right? And everyone was like, oh my God, it's coming back. And then they were like, they're doing comic books. They're doing books. They're doing the web series about Dick. On
they're doing
all this stuff, and it's like some people I know who don't know about Veronica Mars and never watched it. It seems like in today's world, there things get this like cult status, and it can have like there's like a kind of a cost of entry, or like you feel it's almost intimidating, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about Veronica Mars is it's not. So if you're even listening to this podcast and you're like, oh, I just wanted to catch up. I didn't watch it. I thought maybe I'll watch season four or whatever. It's such a great, like you say, it's so bingeable now and it's so easy to rewatch. And each one of, even though it borders between serialized and procedural, which with its kind of story of mystery of the week, the mystery of the week always kind of emotionally ties. It's a little bit like Lost in the sense where the mystery of the week thematically and emotionally really more so ties into Veronica's journey.
Yeah.
And these cases kind of come to her, and it's as if they're crafting really how she's going to respond to her own life, not the cases. So it makes it more bingeable because you can be doing laundry or look away or something. Or like me, I like to build my models and I'm like watching, and maybe something I lose a sentence, not that I'm not really paying attention. I rewind or I look, but I just feel like I want to be with the characters.
Yeah.
There's not this, it does get dense as you're saying, but it's also always remains relatable, self-referential. And her narration, I think, gets more so as time goes on and lets us know what's going on. And they also, may I add one other thing, they do a great job of the previously on.
They do. And unlike other shows, they don't really give anything away.
Yes, exactly. In the they kind of get you ready, but they don't, now you know something's coming.
Right. Like Game of Thrones, that's probably my only major complaint about the television show is that they often did a terrible job in their previously on. I did not appreciate it, and I hated their previously on. But Veronica Mars does a good job of kind of subtly preparing you for the next episode by subtly reminding you of certain things. It was great to rewatch it. If anything, I appreciated how much I could enjoy the show on different levels upon rewatch. Like you were just so eloquently saying, you could like Lost and like The X-Files, you can watch Veronica Mars for the mythology. You can watch it for the relationships and the characters. You can watch it for the mystery of the week. You can watch it for the indie soundtrack.
God, so great.
So there's lots of ways that you can enjoy this television show. And even if you don't care who killed Lily Kane, which is the main mystery of the first season, there might be like a mystery of the week, which really that you feel like you really connect to and that really touches you or something. Or some of the relationships and characters might really intrigue you, and you just want to see what the evolution is. So I enjoyed realizing that I could enjoy the show on multiple levels, not just like trying to figure out like who perpetrated the main mystery. So
yes, exactly. Like or trying to pay, or even in preparation for a podcast, trying to piece together all the intricate details that lead to this. Because really, for me, the thing that holds together this show, and upon my rewatch, what just hit me again and again, is how amazing Kristen Bell is.
She's a workhorse. She's a workhorse.
She's in so many scenes in this show. You know, they hardly give her a break. She's always acting her ass off, whether it's against kids, adults, someone who's funny, someone who's serious or angry. She always maintains. She is such a rock. I mean, the show is called Veronica Mars for a reason.
Yeah.
It is her. And it's rare that there is such outstanding casting and a person just fits a role perfectly. And we've gotten to know her. Are you a fan of The Good Place? Do you watch The Good Place, Ken?
You know, I don't. And I love Kristen Bell. And I probably will watch a Good Place at some point. But as of now, I have not. I did watch that that HBO show that she was on with Don Cheadle.
Oh, Showtime. Yeah, Showtime.
Yeah, Showtime. Yes. Right.
I did not catch that.
I watched the first two seasons, and I think it went on for maybe three or four seasons. And I enjoyed her there. She was a very different character, but still great. Okay. Anyway, 'cause she's Kristen Bell.
Interesting.
But, and she's definitely a supporting character on that television show. Nothing like the amount of work that she had to do. Let's just talk about this for a minute, because I feel like we have to give Kristen Bell even more props. Not only was she in like 95% of the scenes in season one, not only did she do hours and hours and hours of voiceover work, but she also was featured as a very different version of herself in all of the flashbacks. And she believably sold herself as like a year younger version of herself and someone who wasn't as who hadn't evolved to the level of cynicism and snarkiness that which we find her at the beginning of season one.
So that is a fantastic point, Ken. The series of flashbacks and the main plot here that her friend has been killed, and she, in that intervening year's time, she's went from the upper crust, the hoity-toity rich kids, to kind of an outcast in the high school. And she is really fully embraced her dad and the detective agency and that side of herself. So when you see those flashbacks, she really is, you're right, she's playing a completely different character. And that is one of the things, I'm glad you mentioned that, because as I rewatched, I remembered that something that didn't gel for me the first time I watched the first season. And maybe it was because I was a bit younger, or maybe it was because I was maybe in a different headspace, or I didn't have a kid or something. I don't know why, but I thought, how could she change so fast? You know, how could she go from that to this? Now, of course, I remember back to my days of high school, college, and even after, and realize how quickly I changed, you know, from one year, like the year before I was the morose, depressed guy. And then the next year I'm freaking talking to everybody and, you know what I'm saying, and outgoing, and everyone's like, oh, hey, the life of the party. Everybody, I think not everyone, but some people have gone through that in their lives where events in your life happen, or just internally you change. So they took a chance on that with the show, right?
Yes. But
it does kind of place it. That's one of the interesting points that places this as a high school drama, because in many ways it's not a kid show. She is almost treated like an adult. There's one episode, and you make note of it in your notes, the fight that she has with her dad.
Yeah.
And he says, go to your room.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like I think it's in the teens, the episode that happens in, you know, and that's like, wow. I think in the notes you may have mentioned the episode 5, but this is the one I'm talking about is later. That's when she's kind of intervening in his dating life.
Yes, 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 yes.
And, that's like the first time she's treated like a kid, like almost the entire season. She has the ability to hold the scenes and have people, and the way they write it, they treat her like an adult. But you're constantly also reminded by her little behaviors, by the behavior of her classmates, that they are just kids, you know? And her being able to play that role of being like a double kid, like two sides of a kid, right? Like she's playing a kid, and then she plays a kid that's the same but different, only a year earlier. And how long those flashbacks go on for? They're a big part of the show.
They are, and technically they're brilliantly shot. They're often done in either an ultra bright yellow or a bluish, a cool blue, so that visually you always know that you're in a flashback and that it's not real time. These episodes became more confidently directed as the season goes on, so that by the time you get to the penultimate and the season finale, these are great. I mean, brilliantly directed episodes, and the writing is so intricate and it's so brilliantly directed that like technically it's also just kind of a masterful show to sort of watch. I think that I think Kristen Bell, it was a miracle that I don't know how Rob Thomas found her. I've never heard that story, but we're lucky. He was lucky. Yeah. The world is lucky that Kristen Bell came to this role, because she was obviously born to play it. The only other thing I would say about her performance, and then we can move on, is she also, as a character, every week every episode does little bits, like little cons, where she pretends to be someone on the phone, or she goes up to the counter and she does something. And those little bits that she does are also brilliant.
There's a big truck. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
That was Veronica riding by in her truck.
Right.
She's listening to us.
I thought it was a PCHers coming to get you.
You're right. I love those. They remind me of actually a little bit of how in The Americans they would put on their wigs and do their little thing each week.
Yeah.
So many there's so many elements. You mentioned the directing, and there's so many elements of film noirs and and even kind of like post-noir, like the lazy noirs of the 70s, like where the detective, you know, and even Paul Thomas Anderson, his recent film with Joaquin Phoenix,
where
he's a detective. The kind of like LA, like sunny detective vibe. And I love that. Terriers, a famous one season show that everyone loved on FX. Maybe one day that'll come back. Everything comes back. Terriers one day, maybe. Did you ever watch Rubicon? Were you ever a Rubicon fan, Ken?
I did. I watched.
Yes, I knew it.
Oh my God. I love that show. I love that show.
Okay. Just, we don't want to diverge too much from Veronica, but yes, I knew. I, you're absolutely right that as the show goes on, it becomes more confident. And that is something I noticed in the rewatch as well, which is that they, I'm thinking right when it starts. I mean, the DVDs, I watched them on DVDs from my library, and they had some of the old UPN ads where it was like, well, Veronica Mars, Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Watch it, right? It was, they were amazing. And so I was thinking to myself, okay, you know, this is coming out in 2004. This is way before like peak TV. Some of these shows had premiered, and there was some notion that television was changing in a way, but this was even like pre-podcast. This was a whole different world, right?
It was.
And they had to straddle that kind of serialized mystery of the week, kid show, adult show, what the UPN was, because the UPN, like the later the CW, positioned itself as kind of like more of a genre type channel.
Yeah.
And this was fitting in. You think about other shows of the time, like the OC and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah.
And Veronica Mars, really, they took a chance on this guy, Rob Thomas. I did a little research to find out, you know, this was his first show that he alone did. And it was a chance that they took on him, and obviously it worked out, but as time went on, still being on a little network like this, they had to just basically gain confidence through the production itself, you know, that it wasn't going to be this huge blockbuster. And though the critical acclaim was great and people really appreciated the show, and it was great that it went on for three seasons, but I think even that was a grasp. If I remember correctly, going into the third season, it was almost kind of like a play for syndication or DVD, you know, rather than it was killing it in the ratings. So it was great to watch the production get better. And you're right. Like the final 4 to 5 episodes almost play out like a movie.
They do.
And they are spectacular. The pacing, the plotting, and it goes like full serialized, which is what which is what we're going to see from season 4, of course, with limited episodes.
Yeah.
But you're right. The confidence level just grew, and that was something I appreciated too. And by the time I was done with the first season, I can't wait to get into the second, and I'm remembering more aspects of it. And you know, sometimes you rewatch something, and you're like, you know, this wasn't really, some of it doesn't hold up. This wasn't as good, but man, if they played Veronica, if they did little updates to the script and added little cell phone stuff, they were even ahead of their times with the internet stuff they did.
Oh my God. They were so into technology.
Yeah. It was great. Like,
at a time when I think the rest of us were barely starting to grasp that technology, but Rob Thomas seemed to know how that technology was going to ultimately be used. And he had Veronica right on the vanguard of the internet and of texting and of using her cell phone in a way that was organic to her character.
Yeah, definitely. You're absolutely right. And some of the mysteries involve sexting and videos. And I mean, video plays a big part. In the end story. But I had a thoroughly enjoyable time rewatching it. The episodes flowed when I first sat down, I was watching the old DVDs. So I was literally hitting the old play all button.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I was doing the old style binge. And so they would just do a little credit and it would just roll right into the last week. So there were about 2 hours each disc. And there were five discs. And then the last one's like three episodes. I think it's like a little shorter, about like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And I was just flying through the disc. But at first I was a little bit like intimidated because we're so used to like 10 episode seasons of something, you know? And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish this in time to do the podcast with Ken. And then it ended up that I could have been done like last week, but I saved the last episode so I could watch it last night and talk with you. I flew through it. It's so enjoyable. Take a little break from Ken and I just to remind you to go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Wow. What awesome products they have over there. If you're a geek, you can get all the geek stuff. DC, Marvel, Star Wars. Man, they have Game of Thrones. And even if you're not a geek, if you have an event coming up, a wedding, go to cufflinks.com/DVR today and check out all the awesome products they have. Use code DVR20 and save 20% off your order, no minimum. Thank you, cufflinks.com. Support us and support our presenting sponsor today.
Well, we could spend more hours than we have talking about the mysteries of the week. Suffice it to say that right in the pilot, they establish a format where they quickly establish that there's going to be a season-long mystery, a handful of supporting mysteries, and then a mystery of the week. If that sounds dense, it is. But the way that the episodes are written and structured, it's not like homework. It's completely enjoyable, completely understandable. So we're not going to talk about the mysteries of the week. But what we are going to talk about is, of course, the main mystery, the season-long mystery, which was who killed Lily Kane. But we're actually going to start with one of the supporting mysteries. And there were three of them this year. The first one was, where is Veronica's mother and what is her paternity? Because it quickly is revealed, rather quickly, that maybe Veronica's father, the man she's grown up with, Keith Mars, your friend and mine, my sheriff and yours, maybe isn't her father. Maybe isn't her bio dad. Maybe it's Jake Kane, who her mom was hot and heavy with in high school. So as Veronica comes to find out. So that's one of the supporting mysteries that sort of gets strung out all season in little bits and chunks. Let's talk about that mystery, Axel, about Veronica's mom. Where is she? Because of course, when the show picks up, she has skipped town, walked away from her family, walked away from her daughter. Veronica has no idea where she is or why she has left them. And all, like I said, later on, it also becomes apparent that maybe Keith is not Veronica's bio dad.
Yes. And the paternity, Veronica's paternity, is tied into all of the other mysteries. And that's
right.
What makes this so great is that when we start the series and this season, we know one thing is that Lily Kane died. This was Veronica's friend. And as they unspool what happened to Lily, we also are introduced to new mysteries that either led to her death or things that happen as a result of them. And it takes some time, right? Like the first even 5 to 10 episodes, or maybe 5 episodes, to figure out what the mysteries are. Like, we know that Veronica's mom left and we know it has something to do with what happened, but they give us such little bits and they spoon feed it just a little bit that we know it's somehow tied to Lily's death, her paternity, her mom perhaps having an affair with Lily's dad, but we don't quite know how.
Yes.
Right? It's because it's tied into the court case and her father losing his job. Yes. So that's what's great about the show is that part of it is not only discovering the answer to these mysteries, but it's us discovering what the mysteries are. Like
it's also nice that this kind of takes its time because then that gives us a chance as a viewer to start to care about the relationship between Veronica and her father. So then when her paternity comes into question, we care. Whereas if they introduce that mystery right in the pilot, then maybe we don't care as much because we haven't had any time with Keith and Veronica. But by time they make it well known that Keith may not be Veronica's father, I think it's when she goes to visit Abel Coons in prison. He's the first one to tell her that maybe Keith isn't her dad. By that episode, we care. We care desperately about Keith and Veronica's relationship. And so the thought that maybe he isn't her bio dad not only devastates Veronica, but it devastated me as a viewer. Like, I started to tear up because I'm like, wait a minute, this can't be true. So,
and it also makes us it kind of makes us cherish their relationship because it also calls into question her mother as a mother, right? Yeah. Like how she took care of Veronica, what role she played in her life, and why perhaps Veronica is such an adult as a teenager because she didn't have that support. And it's amazing. I have to admit that when I rewatched it, the one thing that I couldn't remember was whether Keith is her father. I couldn't remember it. I could remember everything else. I could remember who killed, you know, who was the murderer. I remembered everything. But so what I said to myself is, I'm not going to look anything up. I'm gonna kind of let it go, even though I kind of knew he was, right? Like I knew in my heart, but I just didn't remember that part. It had been a while. So in doing that, I really kind of took a journey with it. And I felt that the way that they dipped in and out of this and also related it to her mother's behavior, which in the end, we come to find out that, of course, he is her father.
Right.
She decides, I think it's about episode 7 or so, she gets a DNA test and she decides not to look at it.
Yeah, she shreds the documents.
She shreds the documents actually right in front of him, even though he doesn't know what she's shredding, right? Which is and she's smiling at him. Then later, which I believe it's the penultimate episode, he gets DNA results and finds out that she is his daughter because the Kanes want Veronica to sign away all of her rights.
Right.
And he knows something's coming, so he wants to be prepared. And he does look. And I think that that was kind of a little beautiful nod in the show, just how, you know, she is a kid and she wasn't prepared to know the truth. She wanted to just believe what she wanted to believe, whereas her father, he needed to know that, right? Like that was just facts that he needed to know. Yeah. And the way that they string along the paternity through the season really makes you pay attention to their relationship.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, instead of it being a kind of soap opera-ish type gag, right? Like, who's my father? Because a lot of the elements of this show could be turned and kind of use the characters or use the audience, but they never do that. And one thing for sure, though, is, man, I really don't like her mom.
Well, Veronica has a great line in one of the early episodes where she says to Keith, the hero is the one who stays and the villain is the one who leaves. And she's referencing her mother in that line. It turns out that Veronica's that original thought turns out to actually be correct. Her mom is, in fact, a hopeless alcoholic, weak, doesn't have a very strong maternal instinct.
No.
She's more about self-preservation. I think she's more invested in Jay Kane, honestly, than she is either Keith or her daughter.
Or the memory of that.
Right? Right. The heyday, you know, the glory years of her relationship with Jay Kane. So, you know, it's interesting because I got a different take on her mom upon rewatch. You know, she was, it looked like in the yearbook episode that maybe Leanne Mars was maybe the most popular girl in her class, if for no other reason than she was dating Jay Kane their senior year. You know, it's kind of a cautionary tale about the most popular girl in school and what can happen to her as an adult.
Yeah. That's really, you know what? I hadn't reversed it like that. And one of the things that they didn't do is in this season is go all the way back to maybe try to show us a little bit of who her mother was then.
Yeah.
So it really, I'd have to say that all of the mysteries here in this season, the mom one is kind of fleshed out, but we see that in essence, this isn't really a mystery, right? This is really more a mom who left her family, and it wasn't as connected to Lily's death and all the other stuff that was going on as we thought it was. So it was a bit of a red herring, right?
It was, and it ends up really being a vehicle for the evolution of Veronica and the evolution of her relationship with her father.
Yep, because it was really just that she ran off.
Yeah.
The events, she couldn't take the events of what occurred. She couldn't take that her husband, the chief of police, was he called the chief of police or the sheriff? He was the chief.
He's a county sheriff.
Okay, it was sheriff. Okay.
Yeah.
So I always feel weird saying sheriff because it sounds like Old West. But he was the sheriff. But they do call people the sheriff still, right? Like in law enforcement, they call people the sheriff. But it was really more about that. And you make a great point, Ken, is that intergenerational thing. Yes. Where we're seeing people who have been in this same town, right? The parents grew up in it, and then they have this. And this aspect, which is played out to full effect in a show like Riverdale, you know, where they did the same thing that Veronica Mars did in casting like soap stars when they have, what's his name, Harry Hamlin playing the dad. And that became more popular and kind of Veronica. We got to give Veronica Mars a little credit here because the Rob Thomas is pulled a little bit of a Tarantino type thing, you know, like reviving the old stars.
Yes.
And now it's like, that's common. That happens in every freaking show, right? Like they always cast the ones we grew up with now and they're the dad or something. And then they make reference to the show they were in, or it's the same show.
Yeah.
So, really, the whole mom thing was really about the parents' life.
It was,
and their relationships, and that was interesting because I think, in a sense, like one of the things Veronica kind of had to learn this season was that she had to let her dad be his own man, because if we remember early on, she prevents him from having a relationship with her school counselor.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Which, I mean, I was resentful for in the moment, but then if her doing that meant that he eventually ends up romancing Wallace's mother, then I'm all for it.
Yes. True. True. But I felt like it showed the way that, you know how at the end of the season, Veronica is frequently saying, I need to process things.
Yeah.
excuse me. She needed to process that.
Yes.
And then by the time she still is not really super happy, but by the end, she is willing to accept that her father needs to date again and move on. And we see that the whole mystery with the mom and the paternity and everything was really kind of a metaphor for divorce, for something that a lot of us have gone through, for dealing with the way our parents have relationships that we kind of also should maybe stay out of. You know, that's those their life.
Those are great points. I hadn't thought of that, and you're absolutely right. Because not only do parents have to let children go, but to a certain extent, children have to let their parents go too.
Yep, yep. As I'm learning, because my son just wants to play with his friends. He doesn't want to play with me anymore, Ken.
And of course, I guess the last thing I would say is that this whole kind of quote unquote mystery leads to a scene on the office couch between Keith and Veronica, where he shares the results of the paternity test that he took. And it's one of the greatest scenes in all of season one. It's underwritten. It's casually shot, but the performances from both Enrico and Kristen Bell are phenomenal. The chemistry between the two actors the entire season is fantastic. But no more so than that scene on the couch where Veronica officially finds out, who's your daddy? Keith Mars.
Yeah. And that's also one of the rare scenes where she completely is a child.
Yes.
You know, and she says daddy, and she really, you know, and the way she says it is daddy, you know, like she really loves him, and he's what a great guy. What a great guy. She's lucky to have him.
I say if he's not the top TV dad of all time, he's in like the top three TV dad of all time.
He's definitely up there.
Yeah.
Definitely up there. Mr. Keaton might be my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, he was kind of the dad I wanted to have. Yeah. You know, like, my dad wasn't that liberal, but... he was, he's great. And also, come on, he's a private detective and a former sheriff. And you know what I mean? Like,
you know, this storyline ends up not only being a showcase for Veronica, but she gets lots of showcases. It's really a showcase for Enrico Colantani, who plays Keith Mars, because he's great in other aspects of the show. But he's really great in this storyline.
Yes, so. He is. And the way that when she took that letter and the DNA test, and she just kind of like held it and looked at he just looked at it, opened it up because like he knew.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He knew that. And he also knew that it didn't matter. Right. Because even if she wasn't his daughter, She's still his daughter. She's still his daughter. Well, let's talk a little bit about the party.
Oh my gosh. Let's preface this by talking about the darkness of Veronica Mars and how ahead of its time that was, especially considering that it wasn't on a basic cable channel or a premium basic channel.
Yes.
One of the things I was struck by on the rewatch is how the darkness holds up 15 years later. And if Veronica Mars season one came out today, people would say it's dark shit. Like some of the stuff is really dark. And one of the things that's really dark about season one is what happened to Veronica at Shelley Pomeroy's party at the end of her sophomore year of high school. So it's a flashback. It happened a year before, or roughly a year before the events of the pilot of season one. So we get a lot of this mystery in flashbacks, and there's one episode, the penultimate episode called A Trip to the Dentist, is exclusively devoted to the resolution of this supporting mystery. What Veronica knows in the pilot is that at that party, she was drugged, and she woke up in a strange bed the next morning in the house, and she didn't have her underwear on, and she came outside, and someone had written derogatory words on her car, including the word slut, but other words as well.
Yes.
That are equally not nice.
And this gained her the events. Gained her a reputation, and is really... is something that I had to try to understand, that Was it the death of Lily that made her an outcast, or was it this? And part of what we figure out in the first part of the season here is that that's kind of a mystery too. Like, why is Veronica an outcast, right?
Yeah.
What happened to her? The mystery, showing us the mystery is part of the mystery. Another hallmark of this show, where you're kind of, they trust the audience to go along on the journey with them and say, okay, you know, something messed up happened here and it had results, but it's also intertwined with these other things that happened. But really, again, like the first mystery we talked about, this mystery of whether or not Veronica was raped and who did it and under what circumstances, right?
Yeah.
Is really more so about her journey as a character and a person, and figuring out how when you change in high school and people don't like you, how it's really their problem. you gotta keep on being you, Veronica.
Yes.
And how she steadfastly does that and works through it, only to discover that, in fact, she wasn't raped at all. She was drugged, as were many girls at the party, by Logan, that bastard, who I don't like at all and never liked.
Oh, my God. You and I are going to have to talk about this later.
and really, it was Duncan, who was her boyfriend,
that they had sex
for the first time. They lost their virginity to each other. I think it was his loss of virginity as well.
Yeah.
But the real reason, and tied into the first thing we talked about, that it's a mystery, and why Duncan doesn't admit it and why it becomes a mystery, is because Duncan believes Veronica to be his sister.
Which is connected to the first mystery exactly. We just talked about.
So it's really in the unraveling of those, we come to find out that, again, this is not really a mystery at all. Nothing bad happened. It wasn't good that Logan drugged her and she made out with some people. But I think in terms of high school, I mean, especially in today's day and age, you can get over that. You know what I mean? That's not great. I'm not saying he should have done that. But in fact, the incident that she had concentrated on, which was her being raped and who did it, and basically really a loss of agency, of power, of her body, of what happened to her, right? Her memory.
Yeah.
She comes to find out that it was really because of her boyfriend at the time believing her to be his sister, which she's not.
Yes. And it leads to one of the most emotionally raw scenes of season one, and maybe any television show, when Veronica thinks that it was Duncan who potentially raped her.
Yeah.
She goes to his house to confront him at his front door, and they get into an argument. And in the course of the argument is when it's when Duncan reveals, I'm your brother. You're my sister. That's a great scene for Teddy Dunn. Maybe the highlight for Teddy Dunn in season one. And it's a great, yet another great scene for Kristen Bell. The whole episode is raw.
Yeah.
It's dark and disturbing because it has to do with sexual assault. Let me say a few things, side things about the storyline. The very next morning, Veronica, still in the dress, still all makeup, still smeared, hair messed up, goes right to the police station. I think that's an important bit about her character. I think it's an important note about being sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an example that everyone can live up to, but it's an example everyone should try to live up to if you can. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of gumption to walk right into the police station the next morning and tell someone there that you had just been sexually assaulted. I've never been sexually assaulted. So in lots of ways, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine that if I were, it would be, I don't know what I would do. I don't know if I would have the courage to walk into a police station the next morning and tell a, and tell someone what happened to me.
And that's what makes, that's what makes it so, you know, I remember when this came out, I remember discussing it with Sean from World of Video, shout out, and there being a little bit of a controversy over the fact that it turned out that she wasn't, in fact, raped. And I could be wrong about this, and this is nascent internet times, as though they were using that as a plot device in a teenage show, right? Because as you say, and as you vividly describe the way it's shot and the way it's acted, and throughout the season, she never hesitates to say that, right? Yeah. Like, she doesn't, she is like, what happened at the party? And say, she, and people even say to her, when you were raped, it's not, that could have been the basis of the whole show, right?
It like, could have been, right.
You like, didn't need the Lily miss, like,
right.
She's such a strong character, and the way that they treat sexual assault in the show, I think is really, for me at least, and of course, like you, I have not experienced this, is just stand up to me because they just talk about it, right? They don't sugarcoat it. She's not crying all the time when she talks about it. It's something that happened to her, and she wants to know what happened because it's her life, and she wants to either find out who did it so she can wrong that right and make sure that person doesn't do it again. Yeah. And so she herself can settle and know what really happened to her. It's a question of her own memory and her own idea of self, right? And
right.
It doesn't devastate her. It's not as if she can't continue on. And we remember the reason why the police don't listen to her is because this is after Lily had already been killed.
Right.
So she is already in this whirlwind. The people are turning against her. She doesn't know who to trust. But you're right. She still goes to the cops. They don't follow through with anything.
Yeah.
That scene is disgusting. And it makes that guy who they treat kind of jokingly even look even worse, right? Like, you really see how bad Neptune is without Keith as the sheriff, you know?
Absolutely. And, and the other thing it does is it expands the definition of sexual assault, because even though it turns out that she believes by the end of the season that she had ended up having consensual sex with her ex-boyfriend, who was also under the influence, that's what she believes by the end of the season. But even then, she still didn't consensually have sex with anyone.
True. That's very true. And you're right. It takes away it was her experience to have, and Duncan and the other people involved, because I think by the end, Duncan had the drugs and he put it in several people's drinks, right? But Dick was doing it too. And the drink was originally Dick that poured it for the girl, but she,
Madison Sinclair.
Yeah. Madison Sinclair, but she spit into it and gave it to Veronica.
Yes.
But really it came from Dick, but it came from Duncan. So either way, it was like that whole journey that she takes in earlier episodes to find out who got the drugs and right. Like they kind of lead you down that road.
Yeah.
Is resonant more so in what you're saying, in the fact that having the drugs involved just showed the way that these kids were careless about each other and their experiences and didn't respect her, didn't respect their own friends or themselves.
Which, in a way, is assault in and of itself.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You don't want that to happen. But, I didn't want to downplay in the beginning that it turned out she wasn't raped. Because in a sense, you know, something was taken away from them both, which is their own agency and knowing what the hell they were doing, because Duncan didn't know what he was doing really either. And right. He felt bad about it. He felt bad not only that he thought it was his sister, but that he acted so carelessly because it was in line with, you know, his whole character, which is such a unique character, too, of having these mental health issues, but having his parents really kind of cover up, punish him at certain times for it, treat him differently. So I think that was a touchstone for his character, that this event that he, because he really loved Veronica, he wasn't able to, he was a party to that in a sense too, because he really turned out to be a really good guy.
He did. And I mean, all the characters go on an evolution. All the main characters go on an evolution
in season one.
Yeah. And certainly that's his evolution is, and we'll talk a little bit about it more when we're talking about the final mystery. We'll talk about him and Logan a little bit more in depth, but you're right. Every character goes on an evolution, and his has to do with mental illness, but it also has to do with standing up to his parents, and it also has to do with reclaiming his own personal power and not being a bystander to his own life.
Yeah, yeah. And which is a lesson that they're all going through, because at its heart, this is a, you know, we talk about there's adult elements here, but a lot of this show reinforces that this is about teenagers and kids growing up and making mistakes and growing past them. Even if those experiences that they have are adult experiences, they're still kids. And in the end, they really need to kind of rely on each other, but also trust the older adults that they love, like their parents, if they have a good relationship with them, like Veronica does, and work through it. But really, the whole Shelley Pomeroy's party thing, the flashbacks... again, great use of flashbacks, the way they intertwine it with still getting the drug thing to sometimes be kind of like a mystery of the week. It plays into it, right?
Yeah.
I think they do that twice or maybe even three times, that element plays into a mystery of the week, is really fantastic. And it just shows the kind of, it's almost like a snake, the way that they intertwine so eloquently the serialized and the procedural in the show. But you're right. That final episode when she just basically decides, or the show just basically decides, okay, we're going to figure this out.
Right. Yeah. Great.
Is great. And she's just interviewing people and having a flashback and picking up on it and then realizing this part of it. It's really great stuff.
And I guess the last thing I would say is, like every great penultimate episode, it features 09ers that we've met along the way that were involved in other mysteries of the week.
Yeah.
Like the cult guy and the chauffeur and the butler's son guy who cheated at the poker game.
Yeah.
And Madison Sinclair, who was in the baby swapping mystery episode. So all of these characters. Oh, man.
Ken, kept on waiting for her to mention that every time I saw, like, just some mention of the baby swap, you know?
Or the girl who said that the teacher raped her. She's also in that penultimate episode. So every 09er that we've met along the way appears in this one episode because they're all at the same party. And so by this point, we know them. And so it's great to see them all again at the same party, because now there's a history. Like, Veronica has a history with them. We have a history with them as viewers. So it's great to have them, to have all those actors come back for the penultimate episode.
Yep. All right, man. You want to talk about, let's talk about who Veronica should end up with last. So do you want to introduce us a little bit to the mystery of the year here, the season, which is who killed Amanda Seyfried?
Who killed the girl from Mamma Mia?
Yeah. With the big eyes.
Oh, the very big eyes.
And she's in this way more than I remember, too. And I have to say, she's fantastic.
You know, this is why you're a brilliant podcaster, because you read my mind, and that's exactly where I was going to start, is who killed Lily Kane? Let's start with Lily Kane.
All right, so that's where we're going to leave it. Ken and I talking Veronica Mars. This is the end of part one of a two-parter covering season one of Veronica Mars. This was such a joy to record, and I really want to thank Ken again for his time, just for being an awesome guy that he is, and for his awesome notes, too, because it really kept us going. So we dropped off here. On the next part, we're going to get into the main mystery, who killed Lily, and we're going to get into a bunch of other fun stuff, our favorite marshmallows, favorite scenes, favorite mystery of the week, all that kind of stuff. We're going to continue doing that. And don't forget, we're going to do season two, or season three, and season four when it premieres on Hulu. So thank you, everyone. Throw us an iTunes review. Share us. You know, let people know we're out here doing this. That's why we're here, so you listen. And we appreciate you downloading it and listen. Check us out at DVR Podcast. We do daily DVR 3 times a week for everyone. 5 times a week for the patrons. And I throw in the old Lost Mythos shows, the old film lists on that feed. Every day something's being released over there on our Patreon, patreon.com/DVR. Thanks again for listening. Peace out.